All right, and our last speaker is Dr. Mark Sakin. Dr. Sakin earned his Doctor of Pharmacy degree from Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan, and completed a public health pharmacy residency at the Kansas Care Clinic through the University of Missouri, Kansas City School of Pharmacy. He is currently a clinical associate professor at the University of Missouri, Kansas City School of Pharmacy, and he's credentialed by the American Academy of HIV Medicine. Dr. Sakin is an ambulatory care pharmacist at the KC Care Clinic, providing medication therapy management for chronic diseases.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me today. My name is Mark Sakin. I'm a clinical assistant professor at the UMKC School of Pharmacy. And we do a high level of HIV care at our clinic. And so it just kind of seemed natural when Truvada got the indication for pre-exposure prophylaxis that we would begin to do or begin prescribing Truvada for PrEP. A lot of our patient partners are HIV negative, and so the HIV positive person receiving care, would ask about it for the PrEP. So last January, I'm really nervous today. I think we've been doing this about since January. My prior resident, Sam Zakor, really worked with our collaborating physicians to develop a protocol and explain what we would do. Disclosures. So today I want to talk about what the pharmacist can do as far as services in the PrEP clinic and the HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis clinic, describe the role of what we do, how we're managing it, some of the things we're looking at as we're enrolling patients in the clinic. Just a little background, about 1.2 million people are infected with HIV in the United States, and about 50,000 new infections every year. So we're trying to get rid of that. Some of the demographics of where HIV is prevalent, of course, Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, bears quite a lot of burden. So in 2012, the FDA approved the use of once daily Truvada for the use of HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis. Its ability is to prevent HIV is dependent on medication adherence, so taking the medication every day, which pharmacists are usually typically pretty good at handling. So we worked with our collaborating physicians to develop a protocol, what labs we would use, what labs we would order, how frequently we would do that, who would qualify. So some of our screening we pulled from the U.S. Public Health Service pre-exposure prophylaxis for the prevention of HIV guidelines. And so it kind of makes sense or stands to reason. For MSM, adult man, without acute or established HIV infection, any male sex partners in the past 6 months would be eligible. Not in a monogamous partnership with a recently tested HIV negative man, and at least one of the following. So anal sex without condoms in the past 6 months, any sexually transmitted infection, or in an ongoing sexual relationship with an HIV positive male partner or a serodiscordant relationship. Again, kind of this is actually what's in the guidelines as far as a scoring tool as for who would qualify, and we've kind of taken it back a step and haven't really been scoring people. Pretty much, if you want it, you get it. I mean, it's really kind of, you really have to be engaged and be wanting it, and we're not just gonna prescribe it to anybody who doesn't. So, again, screening tools or criteria for heterosexually active men and women, similar to our prior MSM screening. And then for injection drug users, an adult person without acute or established HIV infection, any injection of drugs not prescribed by a clinician in the past 6 months, and then again, one of the following, sharing of needles or in another injection drug treatment program in the past 6 months. So we want to make sure that our patients who are receiving Truvada for PrEP are HIV negative. So we have to have a confirmed HIV negative test before we prescribe it. We want to assess for acute HIV infection. So if we suspect that somebody has a recent exposure, before a rapid HIV test may detect antibodies for that, we'll do a fourth generation test now and make sure that we're not prescribing Truvada to somebody who may be acutely infected. Of course, we're looking at renal function. One of the components in Truvada, tenofovir, can cause some renal issue, so we always monitor for that. And then we want to know the hepatitis serology as well. So of course, the pharmacist's role, educating patients about the medication and the regimen to maximize their safe use. This is what we do every day in clinic anyway. Providing support for medication adherence. We'll supply or refer patients if they want contraception for women who do not wish to become pregnant. We'll monitor patients, of course, to detect HIV infection, medication toxicities. We're routinely monitoring labs. And then we try to minimize barriers. This is probably really where my current resident and I are spending a lot of our time. We are really making sure that cost is not a barrier for our patients. We're making sure that we know what their insurance is, if they have insurance, what their copays are going to be, what they can expect to pay out of pocket. And then we try to use, there's several programs that I'll talk about in just a moment, to help mitigate some of that copays or high deductible that a patient may have. And of course, maintaining routine follow-up. We really embrace this as kind of a managed clinic where if patients don't show up, we're reaching out, trying to find out, you know, what's going on. Are you no longer engaged? Can we, quote unquote, take you out of the clinic? Or is something going on and we need to work through that? So, PrEP, Truvada is tenofovir and emtricitabine in a single tablet. It's taken once daily. It's also the backbone of HIV regimens, one of the two major backbones for HIV treatments. This I wanted to show a little bit. So Gilead put out a risk evaluation and mitigation strategy. And I'm going to show you what some of these forms look like. So they put out some information for providers to use, really to kind of make sure they're safe and effective use of the medication. So if there are prescribers or providers who are not really familiar with HIV care or treatment, or the issues with the medication, or the need for monitoring, or what to monitor, there's some forms they put together so that the medication can be used more appropriately. Most of the time, we'll use this checklist. There's a checklist of lab that we'll routinely get counseling and follow-up, and I can use the checklist to make sure I haven't forgotten anything. And then there's an agreement form, kind of what the healthcare provider agrees to do and what we expect the patient to do. And we'll have the patient sign it, not any legal binding, anything, but at least we've kind of had a conversation about some of the items on here. So I just wanted to highlight that. So payment options for PrEP. Private insurance, of course it varies as to what they will cover if they cover it. Medicaid may cover it sometimes. Most of our patients are either using the Gilead Medication Assistance Program if they don't have insurance. And then if they do, we help them out with a copay card that Gilead will cover the copay up to $300 a month, if that's an issue for the patient. Or if some patients have a high deductible healthcare plan, we will. There's also a patient access network grant that we can apply for. On an annual basis, it's a one-time grant for $4,000. Patients, if they qualify with their finances, et cetera, can use that $4,000 however it fits for them. Pay deductible and help pay with copays. So we spend a lot of time working with our patients on this and making sure that they know what they're going to expect to pay. We'll do most of this enrollment and signing the patients up for these things, so that kind of takes that barrier out of the way. We don't have to like rely on the patient to do it. We know what it is, we understand how it works, and we'll go ahead and take care of it for them. In our EMR, we made documentation of PrEP clinic pretty easy. Put the diagnosis codes in, the routine labs that we're going to monitor each time we see the patient. So for follow-up, we typically see the patients probably four weeks after they start therapy. We'll do safety labs, check on their adherence, check on their tolerability. We'll have them call us if they're experiencing any kind of adverse side effects that we want to know about, but pretty much we'll see them 1 month after, and then after that, every 3 months. At that 3 month mark, we're getting a negative, or making sure there's a negative HIV test on file before we go ahead and do the next 3 months supply. Laboratory monitoring schedule before and after. So of course, a lot of baseline labs, your hepatitis serologies, basic metabolic panel, We want to know what that creatinine is and how their kidney function is doing. Again, a couple weeks later, after they've been on therapy, we want to monitor some of those labs. And then again, every 3 months, we're kind of monitoring really that rapid HIV test. We want to make sure it's negative. If anybody seroconverts, we want to make sure that they get on a full regimen and not just a two-drug regimen. And then hepatitis B in case they contract hepatitis B, because Truvada also has activity against hepatitis B. This is just kind of a summary slide of who qualifies or who might be meet the criteria. The prescription that we do, one tablet daily, 90-day supply, and then other screenings and things that we do. So again, we have about 56 enrolled patients since January, 33 of which are insured, 23 are uninsured. We're working with the Patient Assistance Network program for them, the Gilead Medication Assistance Program. We also wanted to look at and see if does taking Truvada for HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis contribute to any risky sexual practices or risk compensation. So this is my residents' current project. Does it change how they're approaching safer sex? Does it matter? I mean, of course, we're also at risk of other STIs and things like that, but are people taking it just when they're engaging these risk behaviors? Are they making choices around when they're taking their medication, or if they forgot to take a dose or didn't take it with them, are they still engaging in those risky behaviors? So we want to take a look at that and see if there's anything that kind of teases out of that. And then we've been doing a lot of promotion. The clinic has been promoting it. We have been ads in some local gay magazines and other local publications. There are partnerships with the health department. There's also a PrEP task force that has been put together. Some of the local health departments and other key leaders in the community are kind of want to put a directory together of who will prescribe it, who is prescribing it, so that patients have a resource to go, so they know that they're gonna get good care somewhere. In the news, I don't know if anybody saw this recently, October 5th, 2015, in the New York Times, there was an article about how San Francisco has really aggressively targeted HIV infection and tried to reduce their numbers. They're using treatment as prevention, so when patients are diagnosed with HIV, they're getting on treatment. We're no longer waiting for a lowered immune system or low CD4 counts. Patients are starting when they're diagnosed. And they're aggressively using PrEP and getting the word out there about that. In 1992, there were 2,300 new HIV infections in San Francisco. In 2014, 302. I think we need to get the word out some more. I mean, the numbers are staggering whenever this. I'm like, I know it works. Like, I really said, hoping it's working in our community. When I saw this, I'm like, wow, it's really making an impact. So we really want to get the word out more. And I think it's the perfect way for a pharmacist to be involved in public health, is we can manage the labs. We're good at medication adherence issues. So it really kind of fell into place with us, or for us. In conclusion, a protocol-based pharmacist-led HIV PrEP clinic is a feasible expansion of clinical pharmacy services. The structure of the clinic, if one should decide to create one, should incorporate pre-existing clinic routines to minimize disruptions in workflow and confusion regarding support staff and provider responsibilities. We've had a little bit of who's doing this, who should we refer to, who's the best person to put the patient in touch with, and so we're trying to streamline that so that everybody's on the same page. Nobody gets lost in the shuffle. Press one for this, press two for that. And, you know, what's the extension for this person? So we're really trying to streamline the process at our clinic. So it's not, there's no question of who it is we contact. You contact myself or my resident. And then of course the CDC and the Public Health Service guidelines serve as the foundation for our protocol. So the most common concern patients typically have is, what's it gonna cost me? Should I do it? Is it right for me? So we bring them in, we do a lot of education. Before maybe we even start them, we'll do a lot of education, answer a lot of questions, just do a consultation piece. Don't have to do any labs, don't have to prescribe any medication. Let's kind of explain, this is what it would mean for you, this is what we encourage. We encourage condom use in conjunction with taking the medication every day. So we do a lot of education. And then of course, institutional support, provider and patient interest, strong community partnerships, such as the PrEP Task Force, are really helping get the word out. And so I'm really kind of proud of this program because it's been a pet. I've been involved in HIV care for 5 years in our other clinics, and so we got the indication for this, I thought, wow, this is really something we could just do naturally. It's, we see patients in our general medicine clinics. Our nurse practitioners are now able to see these patients, and we're managing them. So when the patient comes in, they typically get some education from the pharmacy staff. We'll explain everything we need to do. If they're ready for it, we'll draw the labs that day if they're ready to move forward. We'll kind of get their insurance information, figure out what it is that it's going to cost them. And then a provider, if they have insurance, a provider will step in and visit with them, physical assessment type of stuff. And then after that, we kind of just see them every 3 months. If they don't have insurance, the provider doesn't, we just really want the provider to see them kind of once early on when they first start. Afterwards, it's just the pharmacy resident and myself who are seeing the patients every 3 months. Thank you. So, I know I talk really fast because I get so nervous when I talk super fast, but, and my mouth is really dry. Yeah, questions? The number of patients for the prep clinic for pre-exposure prophylaxis, we have about, what I say, 56? That's how many we have at our clinic. And we see about 600 HIV patients every year. If that gives you, did that answer your question? But yeah. So, I mean, we do a lot of primary HIV primary care at our clinic. We don't, actually. That's a really good, that's a good question. We don't work with a psychologist. We are, no. We'll... That might be really worth, we have community health workers, we also have peer educators, and so that might be like a good partnership if people are still engaging in those risky behaviors and you want to minimize that, having somebody speak to them. That, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, that's a really good point. Currently, we're not doing that. Yes?
So, Bob, are all of the medication adherence and behaviors of it self-reported?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, or we'll call the pharmacy and see if there's been any refill gaps.
Right. And here's the sub-project on risky behaviors. Mm-hmm. Has there been any sort of result, like preliminary results?
We just got like IRB approval like last week. That's been my residence project, so yeah. So we wanted to look at longitudinally, and so we were wanting to like identify who completed each survey, and the IRB was like, no, that's gonna be, yeah, you couldn't do that. So we wanted to give them the survey, so we had to get the approval for the survey so we could start passing it out, but then they didn't want us to tie each one to each patient, so they're like, that's kind of prospective, and if it's more retrospective once it's done, so. Yes, sir.
I'm very challenged that the free participant
satisfaction. Are we doing pre and post like satisfaction? We're not. Not satisfaction of the clinic itself. We are doing the risky behavior survey right now. But that might be something to look at too, is patient satisfaction with the clinic provided by pharmacy services or a pharmacy resident. Thank you. This lady here.
As far as the self-reporting med-adherence, what tool
are you using? We're really kind of just asking, have you missed any doses in the last 3 days, last 7 days, last 2 weeks?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Yes, sir. That's a good question. So how do we expand what we're doing in our HIV specialty clinic? Hopefully through the task force and through other meetings and other collaborations we can get out there. Personal experience with other issues in HIV care, trying to get non-HIV providers to buy into things is a little difficult sometimes, and they're kind of like, refer, send them to our clinic. But this I think maybe might, since we're not treating the HIV, it might be something a little more mainstream or something they'd be able to do as part of their regular general medicine clinic. So I'm hoping that as we expand it and get more conversations that that will come out and that will happen. Yes, sir. That's a good point that the community pharmacy, at the community pharmacy level, there probably needs to be a little bit more or a better way of getting into the normal workflow and how they're being, patients are being counseled by this community pharmacist. We do all what we think is most of the education at our end. The REMS materials kind of help assist us with that. And so when they're dispensing it, we're blessed in that we use two specialty pharmacies. So we use a Walgreens specialty. They're amazing. They're credentialed by, many of them are credentialed in HIV care or HIV pharmacy. And so we know that they know what they're talking about, they know what they're doing. If they're not picking up medication, they're calling us. But right, kind of expanding that to the non-specialty pharmacy is something to look at. Yes, ma'am.
We did a study of the possibility of having
a
community pharmacy that we talked to some HIV specialty pharmacies. And in the non-specialty pharmacies, most of what we heard is that pharmacists will be happy, but they're very insecure in the knowledge of HIV. And we have some of the same staffing issues that we talked about before.
Yeah.
And they never said they didn't want to work with HIV positive people, but we asked, what about your peers? And we heard a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's
going to
be really hard to make that cross between the HIV specialty
setting. Yeah, I would imagine that also to consider is what to do if there's a positive result.
Well, that's what.
And that whole counseling piece, and then
yeah.
What? Getting them connected to care, yeah.
They felt completely inadequate of counseling somebody
who had a positive. So you're saying that there is an initiative or movement to start doing HIV testing in the community pharmacies?
Well,
okay. That would, we, again, we're also blessed because I work in an HIV primary care clinic. We have a lot of resources, and so we have linkage to care coordinators at our clinic who actually service the entire Kansas City community. So if there's a rapid HIV result at our safety net emergency room over the weekend, they get a page, they go meet with the patient right down there, and that's their link to care. Like, this is the next step. We'll do confirmatory testing. You'll come in for a lab appointment, or we'll find you a physician somewhere in the city. And so if the community pharmacy had a resource like that, they could, something like that happened, and then they knew they could call somebody and there would be that connection right then and there, maybe that would maybe make it the take-in, you know, the buy-in a little bit easier if they knew they had a resource where they wouldn't be doing that and delivering that kind of news and then what. A positive test. Yeah, we have, there's five now. So they have a much lighter caseload than all of our other HIV case managers, but they're time intensive as far as they carry the pager. One of them carried the pager on the weekend. They're on call. Somebody, you can reach one of them 24/7. So if there's a positive anywhere, that pager gets a call and they will respond to it, and then they get that person linked to care. And then they're essentially their BFF for the next 90 days. It's a 90-day program. Get them their first medical visit, they get them enrolled in Ryan White if that's necessary, or figure out their insurance piece, and then at 90 days there's a transition from linkage to care to traditional HIV care or HIV case management. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, absolutely.
How do you plan
it's probably one of our biggest barriers, because they just don't know enough about it, or they're unsure at this point, so. I have many friends in the same boat. I mean, they know, not everybody knows what I do or where I work, my friends anyway, but they'll be talking, have a conversation, we're out and about, and they're like, oh, my doctor doesn't know anything about it, I couldn't, I'm like, here's my number, call me, we'll, you know, or we'll find a resource. So yeah, you're right, that is a barrier. And I'm hoping, like I said, with the task force, that is kind of their, part of their purpose is to expand that into non-specialty clinics and areas. Thank you so much. Oh, was there another question? Oh, sorry.
I have your questions, one compliment, one comment, and one observation.
Yes.
Okay. Compliment, very good job. I love your, what you're doing at your clinic. I love your practice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Comment, I hope you don't have a job eventually.
What's that?
I hope you don't have a job.
Right. I hope I, like, prep myself right out of a job. I had just stumbled upon finding out about, like, the PAN Foundation grant and things like that, because our specialty pharmacy that we work with, Walgreens, knew all about it. They're doing it all day long. Didn't know it existed. Didn't know there's other medications that you can get the grant for to cover, you know, a cost for. Yeah, so even I'm still kind of like, yes. Thank you. Yeah, I have the luxury of having a lot of time on my hands to manage something like this. Like, I'm not employed by the clinic, I'm faculty at the School of Pharmacy, that's my clinical practice site. I have residents, I have students, so I'm like, I have all kinds of resources that other providers do not have. So we're able to make those phone calls and work it into our workflow, if you were, for the day. So, yeah, something else to consider too. Thank you very, very much.